What's up, everyone? Thank you for tuning into Open Worlds. I'm Adrian, and today I'm joined by Piara. In this episode, we will be speaking to Conan Rios, who is the founder and CEO of Asynchronous Arts. Async Arts has been pioneering the concept of programmable art on the blockchain. You can create, collect, and trade these digital paintings, which are split into layers. The art can evolve over time according to its special abilities, owner set parameters, or external data. You will learn about Conan's background developing AR games, what programmable art is, how Async Arts is developing new ways to experience and share NFTs, their Christie's NFT auction, and some new exciting updates they're working on. With each weekly Open Worlds episode, we will be releasing a limited edition NFT. To collect these, make sure you listen carefully for the secret password, which you can use to claim your very own digital collectible. You can find these instructions in the description or our Twitter. Please remember to subscribe so you don't miss out on our future episodes or NFT drops. Thank you for joining. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Open Worlds.
Hi, Conlan. Thank you so much for joining today. It's a real pleasure to have you on Open Worlds. How's life been for you over the last few months?
Hi. Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here. It's been pretty great. It's been busy. And we've just been heads down and just building and been trying to stay focused.
That's really good to hear. So I'd love to learn more about kind of life before Async and crypto. What were you doing before this? And where did you grow up?
Yeah. So I grew up in the Bay Area. I've been there practically my whole life, moving around various cities, you know, in the Bay Area, San Francisco and in the South Bay. My professional career has been in mobile and game development. So I've been at various startups the past 13 years. And most recently, I was at a company called Osmo, developing augmented reality learning games for kids on, you know, tablets and mobile. And then on the side, just, you know, going into cryptocurrency, first with Bitcoin in 2012 and 2013, not as heavy as I should have gone in, but enough to get interested. And then getting deeper with Ethereum, with smart contracts and dApps.
That's very cool. So I'll come back to the crypto questions shortly. In your experience as a games developer with over 16 years of experience in this space, what were the highlights and learnings during your time as a developer?
Sure. Yeah. The highlights really, and this ties into the art part, but was really with working with artists. So seeing a game go from concept to initial sketches of concept art to, you know, prototyping, seeing more developed artwork comes in. I found that artwork really kind of drove projects and really kept morale high, especially for long-term projects that could span potentially a year or even longer. The artist really carried the project. Because, you know, when you're looking at code and rough prototypes all day, when an artist can, you know, flesh it out with higher res work, that really keeps you going. So that was a big highlight for that process.
And so as a developer, how do you actually decide which games to build, and how do you actually build games that people want to play? What does that process look like?
So for games that I developed personally, I did a lot of adaptations, so board game adaptations, taking a game that I really liked, going to the publisher, the designer, licensing it. And trying to use that as a template for what's a good good game that would be fun to play. But then, just prototyping early and trying to iterate, you know, get it out there quickly and get people trying it, and then iterate as you go.
That's awesome to hear. Just fast forwarding a few more years, in your perspective, what's the current state of crypto and NFTs?
It's fascinating. Crypto is just a set of rabbit hole after rabbit hole. And, you know, cryptocurrency is the first one to get into. DeFi is another one that's kind of easier to get into from there. And then once you get into NFTs, it's the deepest rabbit hole there is so far. It's definitely maturing faster than, I think everyone expected. I think this is due in part partially to COVID and the whole quarantine situation. You know, now we're all home and we've all been staring at each other through screens for the past 9 months. Museums are starting to go into virtual exhibits and galleries. Traditional artists are looking for ways to, you know, reach new audiences now that they can't have these exhibits. Musicians are starting to look into tokenizing their music and reach fans now that they're not able to have concerts. So, yeah, whether, you know, life goes back to normal or it's in this sort of pseudo state for the next few years, it's definitely been accelerated in part due to the quarantine. So
Adef, do you think it's unique? It's a very unique situation that has accelerated and it's been quite beneficial for the space. But yeah, I think it's interesting to see what's next. Are there any particular projects that excite you right now?
So I'm a huge fan of CryptoVoxels. It's basically one of the first starts I got into the NFT space. It's a, for those who aren't aware, it's a kind of Minecraft on the blockchain, to take a phrase from Andrew Steinwald, shared virtual online world where land is tokenized. So in order to build within your plot, you have to buy the land token, and the land token specifies the bounds of which you can build, height, width, and that. But of course, all the other digital art platforms, I collect a lot of digital art across basically them all. Marble cards has always been one that I've been a fan of. It's like these tokenized bookmarks. You can basically, you know, bookmark to a site and tokenize it. Audius I've started to get into, there's just a lot to go over.
That's very cool. And you spoke about kind of your transition from, I guess, in the more the traditional gaming space and board games, and then getting into crypto. What was the defining moment that you knew this was the space that you wanted to be in, and digital art was going to be the thing that you were going to focus your energy and time on?
Sure. Yeah. I'm a huge cyberpunk fan. I read a lot of William Gibson and Neal Stephenson. And I think one of the moments was, so early on with the CryptoVoxels kind of adventure, me and a few neighbors, we cornered the market in this one district, Gangnam, and we bought up a bunch of land there. And then we basically started developing it into an art zone. We call it the Gangnam Neon Zone. And basically we just started, we brought in some architects to build galleries, and we started leasing this land to artists, kind of offering like, hey, you want to display your virtual art? Here's a plug and play gallery. You can basically come in and lease land here, start putting up your art for display, hold galleries and exhibits. So I think seeing people come in and start to lease, take these leases was a real eye opener. Like, wow, this is, I can see the future here for NFTs and art, at least in the virtual worlds. But for the defining moment for Async was when I wanted to start developing my own art, and coming from a game development perspective, trying to have something for the viewer to participate.
Super cool. So there's a few different art platforms in the crypto sphere. How is Async's art platform different? And also, for our listeners who might not know much about Async, can you give an overview of the platform and what it does?
Absolutely. So on traditional tokenized art platforms, what you tokenize is like a final product. You take your PNG, your JPEG, you tokenize that, and someone can own it. And that's great. And for our platform, the main distinction is that you deconstruct your creation into layers. So if you could imagine, like, let's say you're tokenizing the Mona Lisa, rather than tokenize the final image of the Mona Lisa, you would take the layers and you would tokenize each of those. So now you would have a background layer, which is the background landscape behind her. You'd have maybe the character cutout of her, her body. And then you'd have, let's say, her eyes or her smile. Sorry, you take her smile and make that a layer. So now you have three different layers that are tokenized, as well as the master, which is the composite image as a whole. And each of these tokens can be owned by different collectors. So you potentially have up to four collectors collaboratively owning this one piece. But then we take it a step further, where we say you, the artist, can now endow these layers with abilities. So maybe you endow the background layer with the state change ability. And you say, whoever owns this background layer token can change the background between a day landscape and a night landscape. Whoever controls the character token, you endow that token with abilities for like the X position. So you can now move that portrait between, zero and 1,000 pixels in the portrait. And then finally you say, hey, the smile, I want to endow that with, another state ability. So now there's a frown smile state and a smile state. And the owner of that can change it. And these owners are now changing this artwork through transactions in the blockchain. So now this piece is changing across space and time. That's why, the name Async, short for asynchronous. So now you have this, maybe you have a collector in London owning the smile. You have a collector in Tokyo owning the background, and then maybe an AI that's running on, a cloud server in China is owning the portrait. And so now you have, you know, this group of people changing it. And, you know, you can change it to your artistic whim. Maybe the AI in China changes the exposition of the portrait based on stock market fluctuations. Maybe some collectors stay dormant. And they don't change their layer. They keep it locked for 10 years. But yeah, that's the main distinction between our platform.
That's very interesting, especially in terms of the global distributed and co-creating nature of it. I haven't personally seen any other platforms which offer the ability to deconstruct a piece of art to multiple layers, which then can be authenticated and owned by the users, which I really believe is the beauty of crypto. What are the challenges you've experienced during that journey going from a concept to then building out the platform?
Sure. So I'd say probably the biggest challenge is really just explaining the platform and communicating how it works. I think sometimes people, the platform is actually a lot simpler than it appears on the surface. You know, when you think about it, just in terms of layers, you know, sometimes people come in with misconceptions on what the platform can do, or they think it just fractionalized ownership. And so, yeah, I think that's the main challenge is education and communicating how it works. And then, of course, as with all blockchain projects, you know, onboarding users onto, you know, using Web3 wallets, just, you know, and trying to toe the fine line between hiding it, but also if you hide blockchain aspect too much, then people start questioning, well, why do you need it? Like, you need to understand a little bit about, you know, how it makes assets scarce in a digital way. Because if you hide it too much, then they're like, well, what actually am I owning? Am I owning just an image on a website? Is it living in a database that goes away when your company goes away? So yeah, you need to communicate enough to get them to understand the value.
So on that note, why should artists and creators pay special attention to what you're building and also in crypto in general? What are the benefits of digital art from traditional art?
Sure. So the benefits for tokenizing your art, if you're a digital artist doing creations, there's no reason to tokenize it other than to reach new audiences and to get, you know, so you can do your art on your own, but tokenize it allows you to sell it now in an actual, a real scarce way. And these reasons could be, you know, you can tap into markets that are outside of your community. So if you're an artist in an area where there's just not a lot of collectors around you, you could tap into, you know, now you can sell art to people in different countries. Maybe you're in a space where you can't sell your art because of political reasons, right? You're an artist doing artwork that the government doesn't allow. So now you can tokenize it and punch it up to the blockchain and sell it there. Or maybe you want to display it in virtual worlds and marketplaces. And again, you need to tokenize it to do it there. So I'd say those are good reasons to tokenize your work as a digital artist. But to take for Async, the reason to tokenize on our platform is that, you know, we're allowing you to create something that really wasn't possible to create in human history. To have a painting now that can be owned by 20, 30 different collectors potentially around the world, all changing it across space and time, that's just super cool. And that's why we try to be a platform, because we want to see as many people use this tool as possible to see what people come up with. And one thing I can also layer in is that not every layer that you tokenize has to be controlled by a human. You could also, you know, we allow creators to specify time as a set of rules and constraints for how the layer performs. So you could say, hey, in that Mona Lisa example, rather than tokenize the background, I just want to have time itself determine the state of the day and night cycle. So now if the UTC timestamp is between 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., I want this state to be day. And if it's outside those hours, I want it to be night. So now we're also letting artists paint with time. Time is now a paintbrush that they can use. And I know it's a lot to take in, but we're excited to see what artists can do with this.
For your chance to get involved with this week's challenge and claim your limited edition NFT, visit openworlds.fm/members. The password to access is Lunar New Year. All lowercase, Lunar New Year. Once you're in, just follow the instructions and we'll be announcing the winners on our Twitter page at OpenWorldsFM. So be sure to give us a follow. We will soon be releasing more details on the benefits and what it means to be an Open Worlds collector. I think it's an incredible opportunity for
existing artists and creators. So I'm very excited for them to become more aware and actually get involved and see what they can develop. I think it's a nice segue into my next question is around kind of the Christie's auction. How was this experience? How does this come around? Like, who sparked it? The conversation? I'd love to kind of learn more. This was obviously an incredible kind of achievement. I think you reached 10 times the kind of original value for the auction. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so this piece was Portraits of a Mind by Robert Alice. And this is a series of Bitcoin-related pieces. They're all physical, where you know the source code of Bitcoin is distributed across these, I think it's 40 or 41 physical pieces. And the artist actually came out, reached out to us and wanted to, for this one, Block 21, which was one of the pieces going up for auction, he wanted to bundle it with a digital NFT. And because the piece is really about space and time, like I think the original intent was to have these pieces distributed amongst different owners around the world, he really wanted this NFT to also speak to that. And so the NFT that's bundled with it is very simple. It uses the day and night time feature, which I described earlier. So it's just basically the piece shown in a day and night state and changes on that day and night cycle. But the one layer control that the person, the owner can use is to set the time zone for that day and night cycle. So right now the piece physically resides in New York, but if the collector were to, you know, move it to Australia, they could change that time zone cycle and force everyone who's looking at this NFT to see it on the Australia day and night time zone. It was very, very interesting experience. And I think it's a huge moment just for NFTs in general to see, you know, non-fungible token listed on Christie's website as part of this bundle. So I think it's a win for the whole industry, really.
So this day and night time zone feature is really interesting. I'm just wondering, how is this actually possible? Is it coded in the smart contract?
Sure. To get a little bit into the weeds, what you tokenize with your master token on Async is rather than the final media, you're tokenizing a set of instructions for how to render that media. And we developed an open source renderer that anyone can point to this smart contract and say, hey, show me the current canonical version of this artwork. And so that's where that instructions has the time rules baked into it. So when the renderer is rendering this image, it hits the line that says, hey, what state should I use for this image? And the instruction says, oh, well, check your UTC timestamp. If it's between these hours, you know, use this version. If it's between those, use that version. So that's how the time is baked into the instructions. And the instructions is just the token metadata file that's associated with that token. What was your second part of the question?
The other part was, can you link it to any other external factors aside from the time zone, like the weather perhaps?
So once you have the system where you've tokenized layers and you can update them through the blockchain, to have a piece change with weather, you would have that token be in the custody of like a server that has access to a wallet and private keys. And that server could then monitor weather patterns in a time zone that you wanted or a zip code that you wanted, and then push updates to that piece through that layer. We haven't seen a piece do that implement this yet, but I mean, it's possible now that servers can own layers and push updates through them. That's how you can implement it. And we're happy to help artists, if someone wants to try this, to advise them on how to do it. That's why when we call this programmable art, it's programmable, not in the sense that artists have to know how to code, but just that any layer now could be controlled through a human or a server.
That'd be so cool to see. I'm also curious, Conlon, to uncover more about the finer details and kind of your thought process when building Async art. So when you started to build Async, did you go through a period of beta testing? I'd love to hear a brief recap on how Async has evolved over time.
Like I said, I start out with, hey, I want to make some of my own art. And the idea was a game developer, I want something that the viewer can do. So that one of the original concepts was, well, what if there was a painting where you could reach in and own part of the painting. So let's say there's a picture of like a campfire with like, you know, some like Lord of the Rings characters huddled around the campfire. Like, could you reach in and own the dwarven barbarian in the corner? Or could someone reach in and own the elven archer? So that was the original idea. But I took a step back and was like, hey, before I jump into this, I'm working and collecting from all these awesome artists. Let's let them, you know, let's build a platform instead for them to come in and use this. And it's going to come out a lot better than I myself could do it. And so that was, you know, how the journey started. There wasn't much of a beta period. Basically, we had a collaboration channel where, you know, the artists were just discussing it and we're sharing each other, the files and kind of ping-ponging it back and forth. They were basically collaborating on a Genesis piece called The First Supper. The First Supper is like, you know, kind of a remix of Da Vinci's Last Supper, but this is The First Supper for programmable art. And the piece has 13 different artists, and each artist contributed one layer or one or two, three layers, which is a character sitting at this table. And everything in the painting is actually tokenized. Like even the bookshelves and the portraits in the background are tokenized and ownable. In terms of testing it, we do have to, you know, we have a staging version that runs on the Rinkeby testnet. So for some of the more complex pieces, we do mint a test version on it first, kind of like a game, you know, just how you have like a test version where that's where artists can test it, try it out. And then if there's any changes or if the piece looks differently than they expected, they go back and iterate on it. Because that's one thing I can definitely hammer through, that when the art changes, it never changes beyond what the artist originally provided. So all the states of an image that an image can change to, those have been provided by the artist at mint time. Any parameters that a person can, a collector can change a piece, let's say X and Y and rotation, those are within constraints defined by the artist. And during testing, if the artist sees, oh, I don't want this piece to rotate beyond 90 degrees because it blocks another thing that I wanted to be shown, well, they can just change the constraints, say, hey, I want it to be, you know, 45 degrees max. So it's, so testing is a key part of the complex pieces.
Sure. And what about data wise? Is there anything you collect and measure to regularly understand the needs of the users?
Yeah. So, what we've been collecting, we collect a lot of interesting data, outside of sales. But one of them is also updates. So one of the things that we're assembling is basically a package of update information about which layers got updated and which art pieces they belong to. So what we want to be able to offer artists coming in and say, hey, like we have this data on, you know, these type of pieces had more updates or these type of layers had more updates. And then we can kind of help artists make informed decisions on like, hey, like layers with more abilities tend to get updated more. Layers that have a person that is controllable tend to get updated less. Like, you know, these sort of metrics that as they're deciding what parts of their painting to tokenize and give control over, they can help use this information to drive that.
Just on the topic of updating the layers as well, how easy is it to request a change to each individual layer, which then gets reflected on the master, I believe? How many times can you make these changes?
So honestly, as many as you want. Our website has a layer changer UI, so you can log in and it pulls up the layers you own and shows you, you know, drop down and input fields for all the values you can change. You, the layer owner, will pay the gas fee for that transaction. So it's really, you know, as much as you want to pay. But that being said, because it's a smart contract and it's on the blockchain, anyone can now look at the contract and see the contract ABI and build their own front end for updating these layers. Because the contract will let anyone who owns a layer submit a transaction. That's basically the logic it performs. It says, oh, there's a transaction wanting to update layer background. Are you the owner? If so, okay. Are you updating this layer between constraints that were set at mint time? Okay, you are. Then I'm going to make the change. So anyone could build a front end, and we encourage people to try and build it. And we'd be happy to advise on that.
That's really cool. And when it comes to selling these digital art pieces as well, can these masters and layers be sold on third party marketplaces, or is it just within Async?
Absolutely. So we've seen these pieces sell on third-party marketplaces like OpenSea and Rarible. And so we really strive to be a creator platform first. A majority of the sales still are on Async. And this is in part because our contract has royalties, the notion of secondary royalties for artists. And so if a piece sells, the subsequent sales, you know, 10% of that sale will go to the original artist for that layer or master. And so we want to make sure that these royalties are enforced. So that's why right now, like, yes, you can sell and buy on OpenSea and Rarible, but until those secondary royalties are enforced, and we're working, you know, with these teams to do this, we can't, like, in good faith, just like fully encourage it right now, because the artists will not get their secondary royalties. And that's true for all the platforms right now that have secondary royalties. Like, currently, they're only respected if you go to their platforms directly. But yeah, like I said, long term, we want to be a market, a creator platform first and foremost. Our vision for this is really, you come to Async, you make your piece, and then from there, you go to whatever marketplace that you want to sell on, what gallery, marketplace, et cetera, and you sell there. And so that's where we want to be.
So in addition to the royalty payments for the artists, are there any other benefits a new artist can expect when joining Async?
No, those are really the two. You know, secondary royalties is a big one, but then this ability to, you know, tokenize and allocate control over your painting in a way that just wasn't possible before. And we think it's a really novel way to do editions as well. So, you know, you can do a digital token edition. So you have a painting, have, let's say, 25 editions, but those are all exact copies. And while I personally am a big fan of digital art and I collect a lot of editions, some people who haven't, you know, there's still a philosophical divide between why owning a digital token is valuable and why it isn't. I think we're already on that fence, but for some people on that side of the fence, but for some people who are still straddling it or on the line, tokenizing your piece on Async gives them a real tangible reason to own a layer. Because now it's like, what value does it give if I own the layer, or I own a digital token, or you don't? Well, if you own it, now you can actually change it. And everyone around the world looking at the art now will see that change. And that's the reason to own it. So I'd say that's a big upside to why you should apply to Async and start tokenizing here.
Sure. And how do you select artists? Do you have a set process?
Sure. So we have a lot of artists applying each month. At this time, we have over 500 on the wait list.
Wow.
And like I said, long term, we do want to make it so anyone can use this platform. We're building a set of tools that allow to automate that process. And the tools are coming along. They're running up and running in a basic version 1.0 form. But until they're fully matured, there's still a little bit of onboarding process for other artists we bring on. So we do look for artists who have, you know, styles that will lend themselves well to this platform. Artists with, you know, good social footprints. Also, we have room for artists to give their ideas. So they have a really cool idea that makes a good use and showcases the power of the platform. We like to accept those. Those features. But ultimately, we want to make it so anyone can create the art. Anyone can use this.
Absolutely. And that segues into my next topic nicely. So for non-native crypto individuals, could be artists, could be collectors, what considerations have you put in place for everyone to get involved?
Yeah. So right now, you do need a Web3 wallet to interact with the site, but that will change hopefully very soon. We are looking into, or we're testing Magic Link, which is like a password Web3 wallet solution. An email Web3 wallet solution. So you just log into the website with an email and you get a Web3 wallet created underneath the hood, and you can basically interact with the site without having to use a MetaMask or a wallet connector or this stuff. So that's what we intend to go forward with to address those collectors and artists who are brand new. Ideally, anyone should be able to come in from, you know, DeviantArt or Tumblr and start interacting with the site without having to go through all those hoops.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it's also possible for people to interact directly through your Apple TV Async Art Gallery app as well.
So you can't update your artwork through the Apple TV yet, but the Apple TV is a free app, and basically anyone can use it to display, turn their TV into a frame. The app comes with different frames and mat boards that you can customize. So for each piece, you can be like, oh, this piece looks better with a gold frame, or this piece looks better with a dark brown wood frame and a white mat board. So you can customize it. And we make this free, and all our other future platforms will be free as well, because we think that programmable art is more valuable with the more people looking at it. So, you know, some people come at NFTs with like, hey, if anyone can see it, what's the value of owning it? But for us, our thesis is that, hey, the more people who see it, that makes the ability to change it more valuable. You know, if 10 million people are seeing this artwork on their TVs right now, then being able to change it right now is a pretty valuable thing. And one thing is, when people change the layer, if you have the app, the artwork public showing right now, a little pop-up comes up and shows you what layer was changed by which user. So it's also a way to kind of like flex in the community, like, hey, like, you know, Joe just updated this layer, and now everyone can see what change you made.
That's really cool. And what has the response been like so far with the Apple TV app?
It's been phenomenal. We have artists now thinking about their works in the ratio now of like how it will look on a TV. So now we're just starting to think about how it will look beyond just, you know, our webpage, our website, you know, or beyond how it will look on Twitter. And that's what we want artists to be thinking about. We want artists to think about how their work will look like in homes in the real world, because ultimately this artwork has to be shown in the real world for it to be a real movement, not just on a website or a Twitter post.
Absolutely. I love that thought process. And fast forwarding to one of your most recent activities as well, how did you get the opportunity to work with Dapper Labs and artist Hackatao on Hackitties? Could you tell us more about this collaboration?
Yeah. So we worked with CryptoKitties once in a previous collaboration for a feral cat charity piece. Basically, every artist, there was 15 different artists who all submitted a cat layer on a series of pieces we did to benefit feral cats. And CryptoKitties came in and they did one of the layers for Pepito. So that was our first time we worked with CryptoKitties. This one was a deeper partnership. Dapper Labs is releasing some new traits, and to help promote these traits, they worked with Hackatao, who has been a prominent artist on our platform, and as a duo, and they did a piece where they were like introducing these traits, and this piece has six different layers, which is they're each an individual kit, and these layers have like a ton of controls. These layers have like 10 different controls where you can control the state of like the face, the state of like the accessories the kitty has, but then you also control the color hue cycle. So you can basically change the hue of these pieces to any value you want. So there's really unlimited combinations. If you take like, you know, three or four different state changes, pieces that can be changed as a state plus color changeability on all those. Anyway, so these six different cats can be changing throughout time. And then Hackatao has reserved a layer that lets them crown the current winner. Basically, whichever kitty, you know, tickles their fancy, they can basically crown them the winner. So it was just a way to promote the new traits and get the CryptoKitties community involved in async as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And who owns the layers and masters of Hackitties at the moment? Do you have like a breakdown?
So yeah, the master is owned by Roham. And then each of these six kitties, there's some Shariq 911. I think Jim from Avastars owns one, Manta XR. Manta owns two of them, two of the kitties. Ionis Sourdis. So there's about five different collectors who collectively own this piece as a whole. And then if you count Hackatao, who has Crown Layer, there's six different collectors who own this piece. It was a pretty fierce bidding war for all the kitties. I believe the first kitty that was auctioned and the last went for the most. And they were the heavily contested. And then the piece itself had a pretty extreme bidding war that went on for like an hour back and forth between, I'm just looking at like five different, it ultimately went for 50th. But wow. If we look at the bid, if you're looking for the bidding history on the webpage, there was at least 20 different bids throughout the war.
Yeah, we were watching the bidding war pretty closely as well. So just to clarify, can the layer owners change the masterpiece as and when they want?
Yep, whenever they want. So it's been changing, you know, throughout the week. They can change it whenever they want. Whenever they feel like it, reflect their mood, or just communicate with the community.
Oh, that's really cool. And I'm just wondering, is there like a time capsule or like a log of changes to view the previous versions of the masterpiece itself?
Not at this time. Right now when you go to the website or the TV app or OpenSea, you're seeing the current version, which is the canonical version. We've discussed the idea of like saving stamps of previous versions, a lot of people to view it. And we might actually implement some version of that so you can sort of see how the pieces evolved over time. But we do like to stress that like the current version is like, it is the like we like to show that piece first because that's really what the piece looks like as of this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And plans for async going forward, any exciting updates or integrations coming up that you can share?
Yeah. So we have some exciting collaborations coming up. Well, we have a piece running right now, which is Sovereignty by Amika Johnson. It's a piece that has time and human control baked in, plays out over the course of 11 years. So that's a big one. And yeah.
That's super exciting, Conland. That's all the time we have for today. Before we end, how can people keep in touch with you online and also with all the great things you're doing at Async Art?
Sure. So just go visit the site at async.art, async.art. Of course, our Twitter is a good place to follow along. And then mainly our Discord. So on our website, there's a link to the Discord. If you go there, then we have channels where you can ask questions. As an artist, you can apply on the homepage. Just definitely feel free to come in and ask questions and see what it's about.
That's great stuff. So Conland, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure and it's been great speaking with you.
Thank you so much, both of you. Thank you.